Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week is a banger. We have Evil A Toys coming on. His timelines are insane, and his fast food toys he's releasing are so good, and we are giving one away. So you're going to want to stay with your attention glued to Toys on Tap. If you want to support Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap, to hear extra episodes. And you can jump on the YouTube channel at Toys on Tap. That way you can see unboxings, you can see all kinds of stuff happening over there. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Hey, I'm pumped that you're on today. The story that you sent of like how you just, I mean, I don't want to give it away. I want you to talk about it, but like how you went from nothing to an idea to something so quick.
Yeah.
And then reached out. I think something cool about it is like you reached out and we're like, hey, how do we do something with Toys on Tap? And I don't think I've ever sent the message like, hey, tell me about your toy company. But I did, and I'm glad I did, because I want you to talk about all of it today. So this is going to be about you, man.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to. Really excited to.
Yeah, I'm pumped. But before we do anything, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
So my name's Andrew, inspiring artist and now toy designer, toy maker. Call myself that, and then founder of Evil A Toys.
So yeah,
that's where I'm at. Yeah.
You're new to the toy game. Before we get to the toy game, though, let's talk about the aspiring artist part and like all of that art side. Tell me what that means. Tell me where you're coming from. How art has played a role in your life. All that stuff.
So, thankfully, the way that people would say, you sort of eat your parents, that sort of term, where my dad was thankfully an artist. So he was in the creative industry, et cetera. So always exposed me to a lot of stuff, where I've always been a creative streak in the way that I've always been drawing or building or doing something along those lines. With that, and if you go all the way back, I mean, toys have always played a big part in the way that I was a massive Lego fan from that side, so building lots of things up, building sort of copying comic books, drawing characters, but always sort of whenever there was anything in art project, I was always interested in looking to do more, if I could say that. Like I was in school, I was always involved in stuff where I'd be part of the school magazine, I'd be drawing the graphics, I'd be drawing on the desks, I'd be drawing in the bathroom. So I was always like doing art stuff and sort of wanting to do things, but never had the sort of medium, I would say. Like I was never a painter or anything like that. It was always pens and paper and like that graffiti side of things. But I mean, come from South Africa, maybe where I was, I never bought graffiti cans. So I never went on the street and did anything. I was always sort of just pen and paper and drawing in my ideas. And then always had the inspirations to become an artist. Like I always wanted to call myself an artist, unknowing, realizing that I probably was an artist. I always thought somehow something happened to happen, like that I have to be get into an art gallery, that I have to do something. And with all the sort of steps and bounds from the drawing pieces and then studying graphic design and then going into that world and then creating characters and all bits and pieces around that, that eventually got into toys, that I actually was an artist. And I think the only way in a moment it clicked was on the Toy-Con, when I was sitting there sort of, and people were coming to me and saying, this stuff is amazing. And I was like, shit, I've probably been doing this. I've been an artist all along. What recognition, what? I didn't need a stamp. I've always been an artist.
Yeah.
But it just was something that people, it might've been the piece around, people were actually happy to spend their money and buy my work, was the recognition piece that made me feel that, you know what, actually I'm an artist. And even better that it's a toy artist, which is my dream. I mean, it's just so much fun. I never thought that it would be, I mean, it was impossible for, in the way I always looked at it, it was always something that was beyond my means, in a way that I've loved toys. I've always looked at like action figures and wanted to sculpt and always go into toy stores and look what's new and what's on the shelves and pull inspiration from that and then draw characters from it. And then I was always in a flat world. And then even studied design, and I could never really model it. I could never get around it. But eventually I got to sort of where I can make these toys now, and it's amazing, man. And the community is amazing. Yeah. Like, it's just so cool.
It's crazy because there's not really a criteria. And this is what I think I hear you saying a lot too. There's not a criteria that kind of tells us, like, at this point, now you're an artist. At this point, you did something. And hearing that you drew on desks or drew on walls or something, like, how many times kids do that? And they're not vandalizing. They just need some kind of artistic something.
Yeah.
I mean, even
thinking about it now, when I was sort of preparing a little bit and going over a timeline to sort of talk to you, I worked out, like, and I studied art at school, but none of the artists really clicked in terms of me liking their stuff. I'm terrible with names and dates and things as well, but there was never really famous traditional artists who really resonated with me. Maybe Lichtenstein, maybe, was the only one that sort of, like, pop art side of things. But then when I'm going back and I look at my sort of inspiration, which is majority 90s, skate decks would be my real, like, that's my thing in terms of Santa Cruz or World Industries and Twimage and all that stuff, that they were actually artists behind that, and that was their art form, and I was actually appreciating art. It was just in a different format that was skateboard graphics.
Yeah, and I mean, 90s was crazy with skateboard graphics. You had all those companies, like, coming out, and then you had even 90s comics had this weird flair to them that we hadn't seen in a while. Every character had crazy big muscles and pockets everywhere. And so art was, I wish that, like, I mean, I was born in 1990. So, like, as I got older and did art at all in elementary school and high school and stuff, it was always focused on, look at these Renaissance artists. Like, how do we shade? How do we do this? But so much art went by without us even knowing that it was happening.
Yeah. And they weren't telling you it was art. And it was. It was just some artist sitting there plugging away with it, which is, definitely changed my perspective on things doing this. And even the toy art. I mean, the amount of conversations I've had trying to explain what I do to people who just don't get it, man.
It's like, so difficult.
it's like the breath of fresh air was that sort of toy fair, where I was like, people came to me and they were asking what it was all about versus why are you doing it? What is this thing? And it was just like, oh, it was amazing just to be able to talk to people who understood it.
Yeah. So I'm almost 200 episodes into recording, and that is the same thing that everyone talks about. That this is, like, even though this is a worldwide phenomenon that people are creating toy art and the toy scene is massive, to explain it to someone that's not in the toy scene is very tough.
The only way I can say it is it's sort of, well, the toughest person has been my wife's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
She can't get her head around it. Like, when we tell her adult toys, her imagination goes off. Like, were you making adult toys upstairs? What are you doing? Like, is it really sex toys? Like, and the only thing we could try and get to, which sort of made a bit of sense, was sort of like, she used to collect ceramics.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, like, painted cats on a shelf. I'm like, why are you buying it? Well, you just buy it because you like to put it on a shelf somewhere. She was like, yes. It's like, well, it's the same as that.
Yeah.
But just the different fun things or different characters, a different world. And then she sort of got it. She still doesn't get it. So
there's an artist. Yeah. There's an artist that does crossover there that might be helpful to show her recollection toys.
I've given her.
Yeah.
Like, now I just tell her I make adult toys and let her wander off and
Like,
you gotta pick my audience, pick my battles.
Yeah. And I mean, does she still have, like, ceramic things on her shelves?
Yes.
Yeah, you know how to mess with her. Recollection Toys makes Star Wars figures in porcelain.
Oh, very cool.
That's how you mess with her. Yeah. You start getting those and putting those on her shelf.
Maybe give me some ideas for even other things. You can build some tanks. You can do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as you go and you're doing art in school and kind of progressing through kind of the revealing of the self for you, of, like, you as an artist, what's the kind of first steps that you're dabbling in art? as you're studying art, I mean, those are, it's so tough to study art and then do art because those are very different. And so as you're starting to do your own, what does that look like for you in the early stages?
So the big piece, which sort of was the thing that really dug its teeth into me, was there was a project that we'd given. I think it was a typographic course that we had done. And it was the first year of studying graphic design. And you weren't allowed to touch computers. So it was all manual mediums, etc. And you had to, the project was, you had to create a t-shirt brand. So a brand and a graphic and print it on a t-shirt. And then you had to use your name, the letters in your name, to come up with a brand name.
Okay.
So my full name is Andrew Levine. Evalay popped out if you switch around the Levi at the beginning part and the A. And then A, I was like, cool, Evalay, cool. I've always had a bit of a darker sense of humor. I like sort of horror films, etc. So I was like, oh, Evalay, that's a pretty cool name for a brand. And then I came up with this idea of this sort of devil bear. I've actually got it to show you.
Yeah, here we go.
So that was the graphic.
Oh, that's great.
So that was painted. So that was, you had to do, you got given a lot of inks and paints, and they just had to mesh around with strokes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I eventually found, and I did it, and now whatever, and I, a bit of graffiti in there as well in terms of the styling. But then did the Evalay logo, and I was like, cool, this is great. Now I can find an image. Image, I then came up with that. So that was the graphic for the image.
Oh, yeah. That's so a very 90s skate brand right there.
Exactly. So it was like this cute baby, but it's still a devil in the diaper. So it's still dark, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
And somehow it clicked in a way that I created the idea of a fun brand, which is still dark, which would resonated with me. Did the packaging, the print of the t-shirt, which was too small, which I could never wear it, which frustrated me so much. But I did it in like a box, which was like a wooden black box. And I did stickers, anything. And I was like, this is amazing. I want to do this. I was hooked in terms of what it was. So continued to do graphic design. But I knew, I was like, I love the skate brand industry and all the things. Let me see if I can start my own skate brand. So I was like, cool, let's think of some characters, see what I can do. The one day I thought of this character of this sort of, well, I drew it. It was a, like a burger, which had like this face on it, and it had a knife and a voodoo doll in his left hand. And I was like, this is pretty cool. Maybe we can do something with it. Continued to think about it, and then came up with the three characters which I've created my toy brand with, which was that sort of fast food kills, or the series from that that sort of line, with the fries, the burger, and the drink, which I drew them all out, completely different to what they looked like now when I originally drew them. But I was like, these are the three graphics. Came up with a fast food kills sort of logo, which was the theme of the Evalay, was that graphic, if I want to call it. I wasn't too sure what it is. There's no real meaning behind it. I've got nothing against fast food. It's just what I came up with. And then continued to sort of see what I could do. So I went down the route of printing shirts, printing hoodies, making cats, doing skateboards. But it was always this issue around, I was working at the time, but it was an expensive thing to get into in a way that I would do a couple, but no one really wanted to buy them. So there wasn't much interest. There wasn't much of a market, where the skate scene in South Africa at that time had pretty much gone. Like, there was no more skate parks. The skate shops were starting to shut down. So it was like, it's a dying place. But anyway, I did go to, I was like, would you guys sell my shirts? And they're like, we don't know who you are. I'd find a couple indie stores that were sort of more, I guess indie stores call them that. And I'd approach them and they're like, well, we started our own brand. We're going to recommend you can do it, but just be aware of the pitfalls around this thing, where it's everything that you do, you've got to have sizes. So you're always going to have stock. So you're going to have to invest in that side of things. Anything that you do sell to stores, they usually buy it in consignment. So there's a good chance you'll give them all your stock. They could set it up, but it doesn't mean you're going to get paid. But the guys were telling me horror stories around them having all these debtors and all these stores where their products would lift, would move, and they would, stores would make money, but they wouldn't see that money materialize because they didn't get paid out. It's like, well, this doesn't sound fantastic. It sounds like a dream. Maybe it's the wrong place to do it in the world. And I was in Johannesburg at the time in South Africa, which is relatively, not a bad place to live, but that sort of skate culture died from it, where in Cape Town, much better. So I was like, well, maybe I could do it in Cape Town. What could I do? And then I just parked it on the side, continued with life. It was always in my head. It was always something where I was drawing the characters or doing bits and pieces. But I was like, it's just going to be too expensive. The return on investment of my time and the cost, let's just leave it. That I then move forward to eventually, it was just before COVID, I found, I think his name was, I put his name, yeah, just because I'm terrible with names and notes. Luis Lopez.
Okay.
I found his course on Domestika, where you make model toys out of polymer clay. And I was like, oh my God, this is the thing. I got all these characters. Let's make these toys. I can do it. And yeah, it was enough. It was a crazy thing. It didn't work out, I'll be honest with you. I'll show you. This was the burger. This was the first one I made.
Okay. It's not terrible. It's great.
So I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So when I made that, I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah. This is like it was too much work. I was like, never. I'm going to have to learn to sculpt professionally to be able to achieve what I needed. So then I put it back on the side and just left it again, which was good. I mean, sometimes ideas need to sit and sort of stew upon them. I then found Ace of Clay and it rekindled it again. And I was like, yeah, cool, let's try it again and follow his stuff to see what could happen. And then put it aside again. And I was like, I'm going to have to do 3D modeling. And 3D modeling, when I did it back in graphic design, it kicked my ass. Like, I couldn't get over the vertexes. I was learning Maya, and my mesh would always fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no. Like, I struggled when I was learning it, being taught it. What can I do later on, knowing that I had to get into 3D to sort of do what I know I wanted to do, which was toy making?
I mean, what's crazy, Ace of Clay, he's been on the podcast. He is so problematic because he makes it look too easy.
Way too easy.
Yeah. And he, I get, like, he's really fun to talk to, and his YouTube channel is off the charts and it's incredible. Yeah. But when it looks that easy, come on, what are we doing? And so it's definitely something that's very interesting to see when he does that. And so I don't even know that I can send people to him when they're learning how to sculpt, because he's so good at it.
Yeah. But same with that Luis Lopez, it looks just as easy in the same way, in that sort of technique. Yes. And it's pretty similar in what it is, but it's hard, man. It's hard, that sort of sculpting side of things. That, yeah, I think people underestimate, even though they might be toys, it's still professional sculpture. It's impressive.
It's unreal. The amount of like when you paint, the way that I've tried to explain it to some people, when you paint a painting, you're painting. That's what you're doing. But when you design a toy, you're designing a toy, box, painting, articulation. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And some of those just kind of go over people's heads and they don't really fully get aspect. So that,
I know from my side, my brain doesn't work in the 3D space in a weird way. And this is what I figured out when I was sculpting. But even when I draw stuff, I think I do like a cheap perspective,
mm-hmm.
in a way that I make it look like it's three-dimensional without really understanding what it is. And then when I was trying to apply that to drawing my character from different sides, it didn't make sense in those side pieces. So mm-hmm. it was something which I battled when I was going into sculpting, same way when I went into 3D modeling. It was difficult, but I got over it.
Where in the timeline does this kind of bring us up to? You're about to start 3D sculpting. You've got your burger out of polymer clay sitting there staring at you.
Yeah.
There's a gap in there. And then all of a sudden there's this massive push that I want to hear about, where you went from drawings to, if I remember correctly, tabling and having figures in like 6 months.
Yeah.
That push is insane. So tell me about the gap in between those two things and then start hitting me with that story.
Cool. So did the burger, failed with the physical sculpting world, kept on trying Blender, kept on trying courses. This was over a period. So that burger, let's say, would have been 2021, 2022, still trying Blender. And then we immigrated from South Africa to the UK, where I knew in the back of my head as well that if I'm going to do a skate brand, if I'm going to do a toy thing, UK is going to make more sense to me in terms of there's going to be a market, there's fairs, etc. But coming over here, I still kept on pursuing with a Blender. went to sort of toy cons and then went to one of the fairs and I saw one of the guys, Archer, so I bought one of his characters and he was sculpting on an iPad. I was like, what's that? And he was like, that's Nomad Sculpt. And he showed it to me and I was like, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. That's not meshes and all sorts of vertexes. You sort of sculpting a bit like ZBrush does. But he was like, you've got to have an iPad to do it and a pen. I was like, fine. Committed, went off, bought an iPad Pro, bought a pen. Same time, it came with Procreate, which I don't know if you ever used Procreate.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fantastic because all of a sudden, what I used to have a method of drawing where I would draw with pencil and then trace over the top, etc. I had quite a long process. So Nomad Sculpt, Procreate turbocharged the process of me refining my designs.
Mm.
Went into Nomad Sculpt, and I sculpted the character in an afternoon that I'd never been able to sculpt on Maya or Blender or anything for ages.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, okay, this is cool. This is sort of potentially possible. So this would have taken me, 2022 would have been the fair, or 2023 I would have done the fair. So that would have been around January. Into July, I'm sort of doing the Procreate and the Nomad Sculpt. And then July, I started reaching out to sort of artists, where shout out to sort of Delicious Peter.
Mm.
So I reached out to him, a couple other people, and just spoke to them around, like, I've got these characters. Do you think these guys would work in as toys? And they're like, yeah, go for it. Do what you need to do. July then committed to say, okay, cool. I'm going to get myself an FDM printer with the idea that I was going to print these models. Looked online and I was going to sand them and then finish them and paint them. That didn't work.
From the point of view,
like when the models came out, they were terrible and I was always refining it and they were hard and I was like, oh no, this is not going to work. So
yeah,
bought myself a Mars 2, so Elegoo, secondhand little printer, printed some of my models and I was like, this is doable. Like this finish is potentially something. Saw they were promoting the Toy-Con that I'd gone to in 2022, that they were doing tables. And I'd always told myself that I'm going to commit to be at one of these fairs. So that July, I reached out to those guys, sort of got progress. So like November, I was making quality products on the Elegoo. So I printed out reasonable prototypes. So I was like, damn it, this is possible. November, booked a table. And said,
already crazy.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsoring Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Like November, I was like, because I procrastinate. I'm bad. If I don't have a deadline, I don't get stuff done because my perfectionism ruins me.
Yeah.
So it was like, if I commit to that deadline where I knew the fair was in April. So November, sign up for a table, pay the £250. Do April, end of April, you are now got a table, you got a show. So now it's like, I now have the next 6 months where I have to have something at the table. Can't show up with nothing. Cranked out models with that Elegoo and they didn't work. I went through like the first four prototypes I printed out were whole pieces, etc. I then worked out that I didn't know how to paint.
So, yeah.
So then I got these models, I'm trying to paint them and I'm like, oh no. So in December was the time I sort of worked out, you're going to have to try a different technique. Like the models that you've built are not going to work. I then had to go and all my models are re-engineered that I can pull into separate pieces so I can individually airbrush every single part.
Yeah.
If there's a different color, it's a different part. So then it created this big problem around, which in all fairness was loads of fun to do because it like plugged into my days of like Lego and building things where now I'm creating puzzles out of my toys and then how they fit together and how they're going to be sort of built. That December, I printed the models. I still hadn't painted anything yet. bear that in mind. So December, I printed the models through until February. I'm printing models where it's just nuts. Like my place is not built to, and I committed that I'm just going to do 10 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about 6 inches. So relatively big models. And I've got my 3D printer under my desk, got like ventilation going outside. I'm having to like squat down on the floor to sort of change the liquid and get in the box and get in these things. And I'm printing them during the day and running downstairs with the alcohol to clean them and cure them downstairs in our conservatory. And then I back up and I built this array of parts, which was nuts in terms of when it was all there. And it was only four. I committed to do 12 models. So 12 models were all there in all their shapes and pieces. And then I spent the unfortunate task of having to finish them and sand them where the prints, because I didn't have time to refine the prototypes that had that deadline. There were so many pieces where I had to get Dremels out and I had to rip apart. But I had the timeline around February, I had to have finished. End of February, I had to finish the model, for, like the sanding and everything, so they were ready to be painted. So I could paint in March. What's it? January, February, March, April. Yeah. So March I'm painting, and then April is a buffer period where if anything needs to be changed or refined, that I can ready for the show and I've got the products.
Okay.
So 1 week before the fair, I was finished.
That's insane. To sign up, just, I don't even have words. That's so insane. To sign up to get a table before you have stock or toys or know how to fully do all these toys is insane. And then to spend so long, I mean, you did it the like most smart way and like breaking down the toys so you don't have to paint and just working around all the aspects of it's like watching artists that say that they struggle at certain things.
Yeah.
But you built your toy so that even if you did struggle, it didn't matter anymore.
No, exactly. And there was that deadline, yeah.
And so I think working smarter, not harder, you get all these together, get this stuff done, and finish just in time.
Yeah. Well, it was insane. A week before, and then the beauty was, it was, at least from my side, the packaging I'd done before, because I'd done the graphic, the packaging I managed to get sorted out, I printed like skateboard decks. So I was like, at least in the worst case, I could maybe have one model, but it was a disaster, some skateboard decks, and then I could do pre-orders or something. But it was just that push. And the best moment around the whole thing was I'd never actually seen the toys together built in one go. So I printed everything in parts and painted them in parts. I never just did one in one go because I did like batches of paint. So only like a week before the fair, had I actually put everything together and seen the final product. And then it blew my mind. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever had. Like, it wasn't like, oh no, this is a disaster. It was like, this is amazing. And I just, like, every time I look at it now, I'm still like, how did I do that? Like, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in terms of getting something out and achieving what it was. So, yeah, super proud. But late nights, weekends, but there was a weird thing around the way I could just work. It wasn't like normal work, where I would happily work on a weekend until 3 o'clock in the morning and I wouldn't really be tired. Like, it was this, I guess maybe it was a deadline, but it was perseverance that, yeah, it was fun.
The scary thing for me is that you didn't put them together until right before. What if they didn't fit?
What I knew they fit. Okay. I knew they didn't put them together in painted form. So okay. I knew they fit, but never the full color, the whole thing.
That's so insane. So you get all these done a week before, you get there, you have a booth, a booth or table or how, which
just the would, table.
Yeah.
Just the table. Yeah. So and like 1-2 meters by something.
What is reception? What is it like at your first show to be there?
So it was the toy fair itself, or the convention, was at ToyCon UK. So they were quite good in a way that I'd reached out to them before, told them I was doing. They then promoted a lot of the artists beforehand. So I was able to put 3D models and stuff online, and there was good reception from that. So I was like, well, it's not going to be too bad. Let's see what happens. And then I'd sent a couple things to a couple artists who I saw were sort of showing to show them what was happening. They were like, that looks amazing. So it settled my nerves around that side of things. But at the fair, I did like a fake setup because I didn't know what a table was supposed to look like. I went to like YouTube channels and looked at the conventions, like how are people setting their tables up. I'd like forgotten how people set up tables.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me see, do some research. Did a mock-up downstairs on my dining room table just to sort of lay it all out to see if everything fit. And it did, and sort of messed around. Arrived at the fair, set everything up. Amazing. Like my ideal goal would have been I would have sold out in the first hour. That would have been like blew my mind because it was that well received. But the feedback I got from artists and sort of collectors and all sorts of stuff where they never seen me before, tell me my story, or I'll tell them my story. They were all intrigued. People were happy to buy it. I sold 6 out of the 12 units. People asked me to sign decks. They were selling a skateboard. It was amazing, absolutely amazing in terms of the engagement that I got. Like it was, and connections and people who want to collaborate. And it was more than I'd hoped for in terms of what it was. It wasn't just me standing there selling.
It's crazy to go from a life where there's not one moment that tells you you're an artist to showing up at ToyCon UK and people asking you to sign things, people asking you like about your process and talking to you about art. What's that feel like?
It was amazing, man. It was, I mean, it definitely life-changing in what it was. And it sort of, where before I wasn't too sure and I thought I was taking a chance, it's like planted a seed that I know, I just want to do so much more. Like it was, it's exciting. I mean, it's rewarding. It's something that what is that? There's a Japanese word. I think it's called a gai or gear or whatever it is, where you sort of find that circle element where there's like the circles overlap. And it's something that you sort of, you're good at, you enjoy doing, and people want to buy.
Yeah,
and it felt like I was sitting in the middle of that. It was euphoric, man. It was amazing.
Yeah. Tell me about ToyCon UK. I'm fascinated by them and what they do and the size of it. And fascinated so much so that like I called them. We had like a 45-minute chat so we could figure out how to work together because I haven't even been there and I'm already like
so. Well, I'll go next year if you come through. It's amazing.
There we go. Tell me why you settled on that one out of any of the like toy things that could be happening. What made you choose this one?
It was the only one that I'd seen that was at the scale it was. It was the only one that was at the right timeline in terms of I'd followed them. I'd inquired about getting the table and it was happening. They did a designer con before, but that stopped for some reason. I'm not too sure why that no longer comes to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a smaller sort of indie ones, which were cool, but that one just felt like it was big enough, following enough that, and it was affordable. I mean, it wasn't too bad from a £250 buy, which is a lot, but it was like, I could take that punt and then see what happens. And all the artists I follow were at the previous one. So it was like, I'm going to be amongst people I love and aspire. Let's just do it with that one. Let's just go, if I'm going to commit, just go right in the deep end.
Yeah. So good. And then you reached out, told me the story, and talked about doing a giveaway.
Yeah.
What is, like, which is so generous to do through a podcast. And tell me what made you want to do that. Like, what's the fry guy is insane.
Thanks,
like,
man.
It's so good. So tell me about this toy and tell me about wanting to get it into someone's hands.
Yeah. So the giveaway thing, you're on my broadcast channel. So on Instagram, so listen to your podcast, saw the broadcast, and I'm always trying to find ways of promoting the brand. Mm-hmm. And again, there is a launch coming around something. So again, I've got to try and build momentum. Saw you were giving away toys. I was like, that's going to be the perfect platform. If I'm going to find people who want to sort of appreciate my brand or might be interested in it, it's going to be people who listen to Toys on Tap podcast. Like you are that audience. And it again probably leans into where that sort of ToyCon UK would be, if I think I'm going to find people who like my art, I'm going to go to the epicenter of it versus somewhere else. So I figured it was a good investment. I mean, the toys itself, Yeah, they something I love, something I want to have someone else. But anyone sends me a picture of them when they shelf, or they sort of they post other stuff around it. It's great. So it was definitely just something where it just made sense. And I saw that last one, and I was like, hey, let me just give it a try, see what you say. Worst case, you can say no.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool is when people do that, I open them and I'll do like an unboxing video with them as well, because it's like I'm always floored at people that like will even think that Toys on Tap is the place to do something, or the fact that like you're so far away and you listen to it. That's such a cool thing to hear. But being able to like open it and reveal it and then give it away, people are stoked when they get these toys that people give away. It's insane.
But I hope so. I mean, it's so my one thing with even the packaging side of things, and you'll see it when you get it, is I went down a route, and it's always been around. I looked at, and I love packaging. I always wanted to do big boxes, and I wanted foil and all something. But I worked in the print industry before. I knew how much that cost. I knew that I didn't want to sit with 1,000 boxes in another room somewhere doing nothing. So I tried to figure out the best way I could do it, where my boxes come in takeaway packaging because they fry. Well, the first one is, I don't know about the other ones, but the film fries comes in a takeaway box. And then the inside of it, I probably spent, almost felt like it was an obsession around me trying to figure out the packaging and how this toy was going to lay inside the box. And I'd given myself the worst problem where I didn't just find a big box and design the box around the toy. I almost bought the packaging first, and then I knew I had to fit the biggest possible toy inside this packaging that I could and still protect it. So I'd try lay it out. I did like I'd do cutouts. I did like 3D models of seeing how I could fit it. It was an obsession to try and get it fit perfectly. With like me knowing that if someone does open it, I want someone to have an experience. Part of a product and only a toy, etc. I always find like the unboxing side of things, like Apple or something, like there's something to an element of, yes, the product inside. And a lot of times I see some guys, when you buy their toy, it might just come in a bit of foam and a little box, which is great. But I know I love the packaging side of things. I wanted like an element of the toy itself, but you also don't want to throw away the packaging. You right. want to keep it with it. So you'll see when you get it. I spent a lot of time. It's cool. And even the next one will be even cooler. It's part of the my process around, I love doing packaging and designing. So it's not like you said, it's not just making a toy. It's like the whole thing in one, which it's, I'm really proud of it.
There's something fascinating about packaging or figuring out to make something work that makes toy making that much better. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, that sometimes I get so into the packaging of someone's creation that I forget to tell them like, oh, also really cool toy. which I don't know what that is. I just think that like,
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait. Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DOV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
People are so creative, and then following, there's a lot of different accounts I follow on how they do box designs or how they do like little zines and stuff, and that stuff is really enticing because it takes so much thought.
Yeah, I do love it. I mean, it is something I'm always trying to push around if I can do something. I just wanted, my whole main thing, even looking at when I looked at art toys or urban art toys, whatever you want to call them, when I sort of looked at them back in the day, was the packaging element. When I'd see someone open up a box and it was that foam inlay, just somehow resonates me in a weird way that I just love it.
Yeah.
And this one, which was the takeaway box, fair enough, it doesn't have that inside because it was just cost saving, but I still managed to make it quite cool, was the next one. And I just want to have a toy that comes in foam.
Yeah.
So like I've got a foam cutter and I've never cut foam before. I'm going to order a stack of foam and I'm going to cut it in the next toy. And again, done it again, where I don't have a toy ready and I've announced the launch of my toy in August, end of August. So I've given myself the same thing again.
Holy hell.
I've got a 3D printer. I've outsourced 3D printing because that was the headache from my side, just the biggest time consuming piece. So he's doing the printing. I've sorted out the modeling. So I'm on track to everything. I've sorted out the packaging that's on order. So I guess something I'm always just going to have a deadline to sort of really push myself is what it sort of feels like. But it's exciting. Yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, like even the foam cutting is going to be fun. Like it's all new. And I love new things. I'm a bit of a serial hobbyist. So, but I don't think I'm going to get bored of this hobby is what I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the fear of my wife when I jumped into toys and started figuring out that I liked toys. She thought, oh, this is just going to last for a couple of weeks. Exactly. And we're 3 years in and I'm still like, this is what we're doing, which is cool. So with that, like, how did you settle on fast food being the route?
So it was because I had those characters and I wanted those characters to exist. I wanted to hold them. So Evil A Toys is the toy company. Fast Food Kills is the first series of toys that I've decided to, just because I had the characters ahead, I wanted to them exist. I knew they would be cool toys to launch sort of the brand, the Evil A toy line. So there's the Felon Fries, which is that chip sort of box of fries with guns and weapons. Then there is going to be the next character is Gangster Gulp, who's like a milkshake cup guy. I'll show you. Yeah, I've actually got it. So that's the next guy.
Oh, he's great. Holy crap.
So he's got Uzis and all sorts of things. So that's the one I'm working on now. And then he's going to come with a whole lot more weapons. So you have like knives and nine mils and Uzis and then different types of shoes. So you can have sliders or Nikes or anything. So it's going to be quite a lot more than the first one launched. Within the burger comes out next, the third one, which I'm going to give myself another deadline for December, which is the burger piece. And it just, all that I did just flows so nicely in the way that it was the fries with the eventual goal. There's a murder meal deal where you get all the burger, the chips and the fries in a single pack, with the next one's being, there's a serial killer sundae. There's going to be a bucket of chicken. Like it can just continue nicely as a toy series, but the Evil A brand, there's a whole lot more of other ideas that I've been drawn over the years. So I've got a ton of characters. So there is other series that are coming, which I just can't tell you is it. They're on paper. I just need the time to draw them up. But there are tons of series that are coming. So I definitely planted a seed that I know is the only thing an issue is my time.
Yeah.
So anything, otherwise, I'd be flat out. So, I mean, end goal, hopefully, if I can ever get to it, is scale down my full-time job and move more into it, or build enough traction that you can outsource a bit of it. But I also felt that piece, and when I first did the burger, that sort of sculpt thing, I reached out to a modeler who did a 3D model for me, and it was cool. It was actually perfect, but it felt like I was cheating in a weird way. It felt like if I wanted to make a change, I couldn't change it, I couldn't refine it, or I couldn't design anything of it. So it was, I could have created toys, but I wasn't able to sort of create what I wanted and make adjustments. So it didn't feel like it was my art in a weird way.
Yeah. Dude, your story is insane when it comes to like how rapid you can get moving and all that stuff. It is to have fully threshed out ideas and a plan and... Damn.
Thanks, man. Well, I come from the world of IT. Like I plan projects and things. I've got to get stuff done. So I'm used to that momentum. And the quicker I can get these things out, maybe the idea is the quicker I can stop doing my job. So it's that. And I guess I struggle to sit around. Like if you're also into serial hobbies, if you're sitting around, you feel like you should be doing something.
Yeah.
So I get that a lot. So now it's at least if I'm, and it's that 1% rule. At least if I'm doing one piece, I'm moving forward. But the element of a deadline, you've got to do more than 1% a day. So it just keeps it going, just keeps the momentum.
Yeah. Holy crap. Dude.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. Thank you for coming on Toys on Tap. We're going to wrap this episode up and jump into your episode of the Nitty Gritty. which goes on the Patreon, and yours is specific because it's like a 10 to 15 minute episode where each artist gets to talk about something specific to them, and yours is very specific to, like, I don't know, work ethic. Like, holy hell, you're killing it. But before we end this, please plug everything, where people can get your toys, when toys are releasing, and when this giveaway is going to run.
So from my side, thanks. So Evil Aid Toys on Instagram. Check it out. It is where I do most of my socials. I'm not big into social media, so I don't post that often. But when I do post, I mean, it's going to be releases. It's always going to be whatever I'm working on. Online store, so anything that is released, I'll give the dates, but that's evil-a.com. And that's pretty much where I'm at. I mean, anything that's coming, it is, like you said, it's early days, it's moving fast, but there's not much else in terms of me to plug. It's just whatever's coming, I'm trying to figure out the quickest way I can do it, the most affordable way to do it, and just, yeah, making toys, just trying to get them out there.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And we'll notify everyone when we do the giveaway. We'll tag things and collaborate on posts, all kinds of stuff. It'll probably run the same week that this episode runs, because I just got a notification it's on its way. So,
okay, wicked. Yeah, I'll line it up. I'll see what I can do. I'll obviously reach out, share it. I know my mom asked me to share the podcast. So it's all like, you know, it's got to get it out there. So, yeah, as much as we can to make it sort of happen. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Dude, thank you again for coming on Toys on Tap.